Why have I asked my HVAC guy I found on Angie.com to change my grandpa's trachea tube? I was so amazed at how he replaced our air ducts. I knew I could trust him to change Pop-Pop's tube.
I think we should call a doctor.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country. I'm Christy Strausser, Odyssey's managing editor of news. President's Day was this week, which had us thinking about the role America's leaders have played in shaping us as a nation in the past and into the future. Here's Vanita Socker on WCCO.
I wanted to bring in a historian, a political scientist, to give us just some perspective on this, Professor Larry Jacobs from the Humphrey School of Public Affairs. He's the founder and director of the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance at the University of Minnesota. He joins us now. We know that President Trump certainly has changed the role of being president, reimagining executive power, his America First foreign policy, so many different things that he does. Wanted to just get your perspective on what he's done as he's gone into this second term, and if it's any different than what past presidents have done or tried to do.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I would say it's how Donald Trump has done things. You know, for instance, in the past with all former presidents, when they have reorganized the executive branch, in other words, moved federal employees or created or ended departments, that was always done in partnership with Congress. This president is doing it alone. Or take tariffs, which he has imposed on his own, whereas that's never happened before. So I think it's how he's doing it. He's doing it himself. The one thing I want to say on this is when it comes to foreign policy, that is ordering the bombing of Iran, for instance, that is an area where we have seen presidents over the last three quarters of a century doing that on their own unilaterally.
Okay, that is good. That is an important thing to point out. American public voted for President Trump in this, the first term, the second term, obviously he won. They wanted to see the majority, wanted to see some change. They wanted to shake things up. Have there been other presidents in the past who wanted to shake things up a little from the norm of what we see in the national federal government?
Well, sure. I mean, I think every president comes in with the idea of change. Whether they actually pursue it is always open. But, you know, you look back to Barack Obama, he put up, you know, a massive change in our health care system. It's called the Affordable Care Act. Folks in Minnesota who are in MnSure, that's because of Barack Obama. That was a huge change, I would say, on the order of Social Security, which was passed under FDR. So, yes, we've had presidents come in. Ronald Reagan, created a tremendous conservative movement in the early 1980s. I think, again, what stands out about Donald Trump, and this is not political, it's seen, I think, across the aisle and among my class of academics, is the way he's done it, that he's gone about it alone as if Congress doesn't exist.
And it seems like there are those in the American public who want to see him shake things up, because things take quite a while sometimes when you go through the established process. Do you think what he's doing now will change the role of being a president, or in the future will it go back to being what we are more accustomed to seeing?
Well, that's a great question. The Supreme Court right now has some major decisions. For instance, will they uphold or strike down Donald Trump's unilateral imposition of tariffs? There are a lot of Minnesota farmers and businesses that have a lot at stake at that, because Donald Trump's tariffs have had an impact on them. So I think, you know, the Supreme Court's going to make decisions. Voters are going to make decisions coming up in November. So that question you're asking about, will Donald Trump's legacy be a change in presidents going alone on domestic policy? That's yet to be decided.
Okay. And what are some of the things, how do you think his two terms will be viewed? I know we're in the midst of the second term right now, but as someone who studies this, there's a lot of lessons that you probably talk about and really study in class.
Yeah, I mean, we talk often about the president's, you know, power as an individual, but also the institutions. And I think Donald Trump is challenging the way we think about presidents because he's undermining those institutions. Whether he emerges as successful across the board, and that's not a political statement. That is, you know, is this a guy who's able to maintain his political standing, his approval? Does his party rise or fall in the elections? Are his policies actually put into place, or are they reversed quickly after his term? All those are things that we're going to be debating and fighting about in the coming years, really decades.
So Donald Trump has remade the office of the presidency in his image. But how does he stack up historically? Here's KCBS.
Why have I asked my electrician I found on Angie.com to bury my pet hamster Nibbles in our yard for me? Because I was so moved by how carefully he buried my electrical wires, I knew I could trust him to bury my sweet Nibbles after his untimely end. Huh, Nibbles. Gone too soon. May he scurry in peace.
Hey, sorry about your pet, but I just wire stuff.
Nibbles would have loved you like a brother.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.
We turn to the KCBS Ring Central Newsline, where Don Levy, director of the Siena Research Institute, joins us live. Thank you for being here with us today. Siena, known for their extensive presidential approval polling and rankings by scholars. So
great to be with you.
Thank you. So what makes a great president? Can you tell me?
Well, sure. I mean, we ask presidential scholars to rank the presidents on 20 different categories, everything from a variety of their attributes, things like their imagination, their integrity, onto their abilities. Were they able to compromise? Do they have leadership ability? And then finally, their accomplishments. How do they do in their relationship with Congress, with court appointments, on domestic issues, on foreign issues? So each of the presidential scholars that we interview ranks every single president in all of these 20 different categories.
I'm really curious, what is imagination? How do you rank someone on their imagination as a president?
Well, imagination, some people used to call it the vision thing. You know, can you picture what you want for this nation? Are you driven by that? Do you have an openness to new ideas, to new ways of doing things? I will say that each and every one of these categories, we don't offer long explanations to these scholars. So in many cases, they're just simply given the word integrity, imagination, even intelligence. They even rank the presidents on something like luck. Lincoln, for example, did not do very well on luck. Other presidents did far better, including George Washington.
Okay, so we know what makes a great president. What makes a bad one?
Well, the bad ones are the ones who simply didn't measure up in terms of their ability, in terms of their leadership, in terms of their ability to communicate, and on their accomplishments. In some cases, the presidents that are ranked the lowest made what the scholars believe to be crucial mistakes, or they simply did a bad job in the eyes of the scholars on either domestic or foreign policy accomplishments. We see an amazing amount of consistency in these rankings. So, for example, Andrew Johnson, who is successor to Lincoln, who was one of the presidents who was impeached, has been ranked near the bottom. James Buchanan, who failed to keep us out of a civil war, is always ranked right near the bottom. Warren Harding, Franklin Pierce, also near the bottom. But what's interesting is the presidents who always rank at the top. It's Mount Rushmore plus one. Abe Lincoln, George Washington, Teddy Roosevelt, and Thomas Jefferson have been in the top five every single time, as has Franklin Delano Roosevelt. So this survey goes back over 40 years. So obviously these are different presidential scholars who have responded to the survey over that lengthy period of time, but they rank those top five. We do see some movement in the 5 through 10. You know, the most recent survey, we saw Eisenhower, Truman, and Lyndon Johnson move up into the top five, and we saw other presidents like Andrew Jackson and Woodrow Wilson, in part because of new information that scholars developed, dropped out of the top 10.
So that actually brings me to another question I had, which is, how does public approval of presidents tend to change over time, especially these long stretches of time, like hundreds of years?
Well, sure. History does move very slowly. And what we see changing is sometimes when new scholars have reviewed the record of presidents, Andrew Jackson being one of them, who was an expansionist president. But as public opinion moved to frown on some of the ideas, some of the behaviors of Andrew Jackson, he fell. Other presidents like John Adams, and some of this, you know, in fact, comes from when we see detailed accounts that either are in written pieces or even in things that will show up in, you know, a PBS broadcast, for example, will move up. It takes typically history about 40 years to settle on where a president's going to be. But occasionally a president will drop or rise depending on how historians change in their view of history.
Polling agency Gallup recently announced they're going to stop publishing monthly approval ratings. So I'm curious to hear from you. What does the future of public opinion look like?
Well, I think that certainly Gallup made an amazing contribution. 9 decades of doing public opinion on presidential approval. It's a shame that for business reasons, they say they're curtailing that. Others like the work that we do, we poll regularly with the New York Times Siena poll. Other national polls will continue to do that work. We feel it's important. We feel that this is a barometer of how the public, that's very different from the survey we're talking about, but how the public feels about the job that the president is doing. And certainly there will be many nonpartisan public opinion firms that will continue to measure presidential approval. We're, as a citizenry, I think, entitled to express our opinion of how we feel our president is doing.
One man who tried hard but never quite made it to the Oval Office is Jesse Jackson. We lost the presidential contender this week. How will history remember him? Here's Mark Sandalow.
Why have I asked my HVAC guy I found on Angie.com to change my grandpa's trachea tube?
Because I was so amazed by how quickly he replaced our air ducts. I knew I could trust him to change Pop-Pop's tube while I was on vacation.
Make it quick, young man.
Aw, see? Pop-Pop trusts you.
I think we should call a doctor.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses. Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Mark, good morning. Jesse Jackson, of course, a protege of Martin Luther King. He was with Dr. King in Memphis when he was assassinated. Did Jackson carry on Dr. King's legacy?
In a very different way, Steve. I mean, Martin Luther King was a moral leader and a religious leader and led, you know, nonviolence. And Jackson, you know, pushed many of the same themes. But Jackson was much more of a political figure. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, he ran for president twice, 1984 and 1988. It's amazing because I remember those times, and no one that I knew thought there was any chance that Jackson would get the nomination or even be considered for vice president. The idea of an African-American president back then was simply, you know, was something beyond what seemed politically feasible. And then it was only 20 years later, after the 88 campaign in 2008, that Barack Obama won, you know, the presidency. In 1984, Jackson came in right behind Walter Mondale and Gary Hart. And, you know, he got something like 3 million votes. And again, most people saw it symbolic, but he came to San Francisco for the 1984 convention and delivered what many thought was, you know, the most riveting speech of the convention, going on and on about how our time has come and talking about if the Democrats are able to patch together not only the traditional labor vote and the white working class vote, but we're able to add to that African Americans and Asian Americans and Latino Americans and gays and lesbians and disabled people. They build this rainbow that would eventually lead them to the majority. And it's amazing how that sort of conventional wisdom today, but 1984, when he was in the Moscone Center saying that, those were bold words.
Hearing today from the president of the National Urban League, Mark Morial, said that if there had not been a Jesse Jackson running for president when he did, we may not have had a Barack Obama becoming president.
Yeah, these are hard things to say. You know, Jackson, had a mixed reputation in that he was, you know, incredibly bright, flamboyant, well-spoken, and he preceded Obama in many of those ways to make it seem acceptable that, yes, an African-American can enter mainstream politics. He was also seen as, you know, as self-promoting. You mentioned that he was at Martin Luther King's side when he was killed. There was lots of controversy about that. He was indeed at the Lorraine Hotel in Memphis, Tennessee, when King was assassinated in 1968. But he went on to build that story about cradling Martin Luther King's head in his hands, and some of the other people who were there with King, you know, began to say, you know, that's not exactly right. So it's always hard to tell. And, you know, you mentioned the president of the National Urban League. I'm stunned by the news, something I was not aware of, that the president of the United States, Donald Trump, actually has warm things to say about Jesse Jackson. Many years ago, back in the 1990s, Trump gave Jackson free space in his 40 Wall Street Trump building for the Rainbow Coalition. And again, he sent out a positive, nice, true social message about him today. And I mean, I suppose you could make the case that while Jesse Jackson, you know, saw this working class coalition built together, although it is almost a 360-degree, you know, spin around from what Trump is doing, 180 plus 180. Trump in many ways sees himself as the same kind of person who can build together working-class people. But I went back and watched this little exchange between them. I saw Donald Trump introducing Jackson, saying, "Jesse Jackson just told you that all the wealth in America is concentrated in just a few hands." And I thought to myself, what's wrong with that? That's the difference between Trump and Jackson.
Opinions will vary widely, of course, but who is the greatest president in recent history? Here's Chad Hartman.
I mean, I've got Johnson, Nixon, Carter, Reagan, H.W., Clinton, then we go to W., then we go to Obama, Trump, Biden. You know, for me, it's Clinton, H.W., and Obama, and there's the list.
Does Reagan make the list?
He's an actual conservative, unlike the rhino in the White House right now.
Actual conservative, big role in ending the Cold War.
Yeah, I would never deny how consequential Ronald Reagan was. And at the time, as a typical young punk, whatever policies I had were left of where I am in many issues now, I definitely look at Reagan much more favorably now than I did at the time. Can we add that to the potpourri?
Yes.
Your best president, and also who is the most consequential president of your life? I mean, this guy in the White House now, a lot of stuff happens with this guy.
I haven't noticed.
Yeah, I mean, he's not exactly Jimmy Carter, the shrinking president. I think that might have been a Time magazine cover, something like that. Obviously, Barack Obama has to be way up in the list because first black president.
Mm-hmm.
And healthcare and how he dramatically altered healthcare, you know, within our governmental medical apparatus. If someone wants to say W, considering what happened on 9/11 and the war on terror, that's obviously out there. You know, Clinton, outside of his own screw-ups and legal question, right, was war quiet at a larger scale? Not, you know, some could say, hey, reporting afterwards suggests in 98 had a chance to take out Osama bin Laden and didn't do it. And look what happened years later. He benefited from some of the economic difficult changes George H.W. Bush made. And he also benefited from what was happening in Silicon Valley. But after getting his butt kicked in the 94 midterms with the toe guy, Dick Morris, he triangulated, and he was a center-left Democrat.
You could probably give him a little credit for coming out of virtually nowhere, not just to take the presidency, but kind of wake up the Democratic Party.
Yes. To move the party more to the center. Let's bring that back. That'd be a novel concept. And then let's go with one more. Who will be the next president of the United States? Or maybe we'll phrase it this way. February 1st, 2029. Who is the president of the United States? February 1st, 2029. There are a lot of selections available. And do not undersell the guy who's in the White House now as a possibility. Ronald Reagan and Donald Trump. I think here we are in the favorite category. Bill Clinton, number one. Ronnie, JFK, and Obama. I cannot qualify JFK. We're just saying within our lifetime, not my lifetime. Carter, the best human. Probably, right? I mean, viewed that way.
There's certainly been probably none that were as consequential after their presidency than Jimmy Carter, right?
No, 100%. Rutherford P. Hayes was my favorite.
Oh, Ruthie. We'll hear from a Hayes later in the show.
All right. Maybe Isaac. Is that what we're hearing?
No, we're going to be hearing from Walker Hayes.
Oh, okay. Bill Clinton. Tough question. They all have warts. Kennedy for being the first president to stand up the Russians, and then Reagan for finally defeating the Russians, tearing down the wall. Yeah, I mean, there's no denying Reagan's consequence. And then, you know, JFK for the short period of time that he was president, absolutely.
While the person in the White House has changed many times, there are things that seem to return over and over again. One of them is questions about First Amendment rights and freedom of the press. Here's what happened this week with CBS from Adam and Jordana at WCCO.
Stephen Colbert last night was scheduled to have an interview on Late Night with Stephen Colbert, or The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, with James Tallarico. He is a representative, a state representative in Texas, who is running for Senate. James Tallarico, a very religious, very eloquent speaker, but clearly a Democrat on the left, and it didn't air. And Stephen Colbert took time out of his monologue, after sitting down at the desk, to explain.
As he should.
By the way, we're not talking to James Tallarico because CBS did not allow him to do that, citing the fairness doctrine from the FCC.
But okay. I'll just play.
Let's play.
You know who is not one of my guests tonight? That's Texas State Representative James Tallarico. He was supposed to be here, but we were told in no uncertain terms by our network's lawyers, who called us directly, that we could not have him on the broadcast. Then I was told in some uncertain terms that not only could I not have him on, I could not mention me not having him on. And because my network clearly doesn't want us to talk about this, let's talk about this. You've probably heard. So you might have heard of this thing called the equal time rule, okay? It's an old FCC rule that applies only to radio and broadcast television, not cable or streaming, that says if a show has a candidate on during an election, they have to have all that candidate's opponents on as well. Carr said he was thinking about dropping the exception for talk shows because he said some of them were motivated by partisan purposes. Well, sir, you're chairman of the FCC, so FCCU.
Okay, it wasn't the fairness doctrine, it was the equal time rule. Yeah. And you and I were talking about this.
There is also a fairness doctrine that has gone by the wayside, which is different.
This is a talk show.
Right.
Stephen Colbert is a talk show.
It's also entertainment.
Right.
It's not even like a news program.
Right.
It's entertainment.
It's entertainment.
Yeah.
And the FCC has determined that talk shows are exempt from that equal time rule. Now, it's different if I'm in the newsroom and talk to get one side of the story. You want to get both sides of any issue.
Mm-hmm.
Understandable.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what this is. And this, by the way, there isn't any hard and fast rule that he had to do this. This is merely CBS looking for financial gain, trying to curry favor with the Trump administration because of a merger deal, saying, okay, you can't have that guy on. It's shameful what CBS did.
Ridiculous.
And bravo to Stephen Colbert for talking about it, saying it out loud. It's
I'm surprised
shameless.
He hasn't gotten suspended yet. Because he apparently he got the rule, by the way, you're not allowed to talk about us not letting you talk to him.
Right.
But he did anyway. He addressed that. And I'm surprised they haven't suspended
him. I mean, he's a dead man walking. He's out in May anyway. But and a texter raised this point, which Colbert brings up, too. Guess what? Guess where this doesn't apply? Conservative talk radio.
Our boss showed up. He's in studio. I think I'm currently being fired. Hi, Brad.
Hi. So if you guys had somebody on.
Yeah.
And they were running. If you totally skirted the fact that they were running, of course you could have a news interview.
Okay.
Right? That hardly ever happens. If you were to have Angie Craig on, you would ask her about her
re-election campaign. Okay, yeah.
Well,
or
not re-election,
campaign.
But Senate campaign. Mm-hmm. It's a very slippery slope. So in this particular case, I know this is going to sound weird. I actually don't fault CBS from saying, if you have this person on, you're going to have another competitor in the race. Mm-hmm. When you said you get to use the facility, that means using the airwaves. So if he's talking about running.
So what if he doesn't ask James Tallarico anything about running?
Do you think he'll literally have him on the air to not ask about running?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it's a silly talk show.
Oh, he's going to talk to him about trying to flip the get Ted Cruz out of there, flipping that Senate seat to Democrats.
The way that it's described is if you have someone on who's currently in office and you talk to them about, let's say we were talking to somebody about ICE or, you know, something that was in the news and you never brought up, hey, what about your election campaign or whatever? I don't have to provide equal time.
Okay.
If in any way, shape or form I bring up them running because they are in a race, I have to provide equal time for a bona fide candidate.
Okay.
I really appreciate this correction. Thank you.
Yeah.
Because I did not know that.
But it is a very slippery slope. Because if we had somebody on who's currently in office or someone who is running for something, let's say we brought on Peggy Flanagan and we asked her about fraud specifically.
Mm-hmm.
We never asked her about running for the Senate. Then we would not be liable for the equal time provision because we're not asking her about her campaign or running.
Mm-hmm.
The second that comes into to play, then we are open for equal time.
Excellent points.
And all we have to do is make an offer to the other candidate to join us.
Well, do we have to make the offer or do we have to get them
on? We do not have to make the offer. We just have to accept when they want to be a part of it. We are open for business in terms of that. We are open for the equal time provision. And we have had, by the way, already candidates who have utilized that. They have heard a candidate on the air and have said, I'd like to come on.
Sure.
Okay. So it's not even incumbent on us to ask the candidate.
It is not.
They have to listen and say, I want 7 minutes of your
time. We're not out there soliciting, hey, you know, on the street corner.
Yeah. Okay.
Hey, if you're running for U.S. Senate or this particular congressional
seat.
Okay.
So let's go back. Because do you mind? Then you said you don't blame Paramount. Couldn't Paramount have talked to Stephen and say, okay, this is fine. If you want to have him on, you just can't talk about re-election.
Sure.
And that would have been
okay. And or have said, if you want to have him on, you're going to have every candidate in his particular race on.
Okay.
Do you really want to do that?
Oh, God, no. Right? You don't want to talk to them.
So to me, obviously there could have been a better conversation had, right, with the host to say, you're fine, because I would tell you guys the same thing. You're fine in having so-and-so on, but just know you're opening yourself up if you're talking about a re-election campaign. You have to have everybody else that is in that race that wants on. That's a bona fide candidate, by the way, and there's some legalities there.
What qualifies as a bona fide candidate.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
So why didn't Paramount just tell Stephen that instead of the lawyers coming and saying
them.
You can't have him on?
Yeah. Because, again, they... first and foremost, they were trying to nip it in the bud and say, we don't want any, we don't want to be open for any sort of equal time asks.
Okay.
But to me, I would have had the initial conversation to say, we hear you want to have this particular representative on. Just understand, because you are having him on to talk about his race and all the things that go with it, you're going to be open. You're going to open us up for equal time. Do you want to have every person in that race on?
Yeah.
Then, so.
I can't get into the mind of Stephen Colbert or in the head of the minds of the officials at CBS. If the result is Ted Cruz is going to be on Stephen Colbert, I don't think Stephen Colbert says no to that at all.
Yeah, I want to see that too.
Right. Or Jasmine Crockett or whoever, you know.
Yeah, maybe all of
race.
The conversation hasn't been revealed to us. But,
right.
I mean,
I understand.
I mean, it makes for good news and a good talk show topic, obviously, now. But.
Really interesting. Okay, and enlightening. Thank you for educating us. Thank God Brad knows stuff, because, you know, clearly we don't.
I have to.
So you people are, no, you think, what was, here's the text that I want to read.
Someone says two words, Fox News. Listen, Fox is cable.
Right.
None of this applies to cable.
Correct.
You can say and do whatever you want. That's why Fox News is so effective. They only platform the people that they want. They're not news. Please remember that.
Nor is Stephen Colbert,
no,
the Late Show.
Of course he's not.
Just to ridiculous. This text says, whether you recognize it or not, Colbert's show is perceived biased toward the left. It's not perceived. It is absolutely biased towards the left.
Of course
and the
is.
Leadership has every right to discourage that in order to improve ratings. Okay,
oh, please.
Maybe
he's not
so.
Worried about ratings.
No kidding. Especially since it's ending anyway. It's his show. He can do with it. Well, he can talk to the guests that he wants to. He's under no obligation to, like, come out with his monologue and say, here are three jokes I can tell about Republicans.
Right,
here are three jokes
right.
I can tell about Democrats.
Mm-hmm. But I guess the time is what's interesting and Brad's explanation of it. But if you take it one step further and think it through, sure, you want James Tallarico's opposition. I mean, I don't know how many candidates there are. Yeah, I haven't researched that. There could be 25 candidates running for his seat. And you're right. You don't want some Yahoo coming on, wasting seven
Correct.
Minutes of quality late night talk show airtime just because you had James Tallarico on. So I guess I can see, like Brad changed my, he helped shift my perspective. I can see why Paramount did it. And that does seem lawful. Right? I mean, I think even had Stephen explained it that way.
It does, but I don't think, like this, I don't think, this isn't the first case, however, of someone who is high profile and is in fact running for re-election. I mean, the reason that the exemption was placed was, this is when Jay Leno talked to Arnold Schwarzenegger, who was running for governor. Because he's Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, he's a celebrity.
But then the people who are running against Arnold Schwarzenegger said, hey, wait a minute. We want to be on the Tonight Show. And that's where this.
But that's where the rub is, because it's the Tonight Show. So, Brad, if you're out there, come back in, because the Tonight Show is entertainment and it's talk. Right? Or weren't we discussing this in the aspect of news as versus entertainment or talk? Can an entertainment show have on whoever they want without the equal time kicking in just because it's
media.
Entertainment?
Let's take a break.
That.
We'll get the answer
wait,
to that after
back.
This break
okay.
on CC. 11:53, that's your Linda's Construction Time Check. February, the perfect time to improve comfort with Infinity from Marvin Windows. Get 75% off installation labor. We're talking about the interview that wasn't with Stephen Colbert and James Tallarico. By the way, it is on YouTube, which Stephen Colbert was directing his viewers. And somebody just texted it. It's on YouTube, and it's a fantastic interview.
Which is unregulated, by the way,
Correct.
By the FCC. YouTube, you
That's
can really right. have whoever you want on.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Barry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.